The House of Mouse is quickly growing into the biggest mansion on the block. Disney announced Tuesday that they would be buying Comcast's stake in Hulu, giving them full control of the company by 2024. The Hulu acquisition comes after Disney purchased 21st Century Fox in March. Combine that with ownership of ESPN, ABC, Pixar, Marvel, and on and on. And today, Disney is an entertainment juggernaut valued at an estimated $129 billion.
Oh, boy!
Disney's growth is part of a trend of media corporation consolidation. But as ownership is becoming increasingly concentrated, distributors, content creators, and consumers are often the ones left feeling the squeeze. Joining me now is David Sims, a culture staff writer for The Atlantic. Thanks for being with us, David.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start. I mean, are any other companies close to owning as many properties as Disney owns? I mean, is there a precedent for this within the entertainment industry?
I wouldn't think so. The closest precedent is in the sort of old golden age of Hollywood, when the issue wasn't what companies owned, but was that they also had the distribution. They had theaters. There was a sort of vertical integration from studio to movie theater. Now the discussion is over just how much of the entertainment industry Disney is sort of sucking up.
Let's talk specifically about the Hulu deal. Why was Disney keen to get involved or at least get the ownership stake in Hulu, given that they have their own streaming platform now?
Well, it's sort of similar to what Disney did in buying 20th Century Fox. Hulu, it seems, is going to function as a kind of add-on or parallel service to Disney Plus. Disney Plus can be their streaming service that has the sort of Disney brand things we know, the animated films, the Star Wars movies, the Marvel stuff that's sort of very family-oriented. And then Hulu allows them to have more adult content, and they can keep those things separate. And Disney, in buying 20th Century Fox, obviously they got a lot of movie rights that they like to big franchises, but also they're going to use 20th Century Fox to sort of release more adult entertainment that doesn't have to be under the Disney banner.
At what point does Disney become an entertainment monopoly?
I suppose legally there would have to be some kind of a challenge. Obviously, these deals are going through without too much government intervention. But the question of a monopoly, like I said, it used to be about how companies can sort of own, you know, the ways of making movies and the ways of releasing movies and exhibiting them in theaters. Now, with the internet, that becomes sort of a different question. A lot of what Disney's doing is trying to compete with Netflix, which is also making its own stuff and putting it out to this giant subscriber base online. And in buying all this stuff, Disney's trying to catch up and have a sort of streaming offering that's as big as something like Netflix. That's where the sort of monopoly question comes in. It's kind of what's like what's going on in the tech industry, where companies like Apple and Google and Facebook, you know, acquire all these other tech companies like YouTube or WhatsApp or whatever. And it just becomes a question of, you know, maybe four or five big companies controlling basically everything we watch.
I want to pivot for a moment here to something that Abigail Disney, who is the granddaughter of Disney co-founder Roy Disney, said recently. And she was criticizing Disney CEO Bob Iger, who makes $65 million in a compensation package last year, as an example of income inequality in the United States. Tell us a little bit about that. Where did that come from and what was the outcry over?
Abigail Disney, who's part of the Disney family. I think she's on the board of the company. You know, she's occupies that kind of family position at Disney. I think was sort of just moved to talk about the gargantuan size of that paycheck. Obviously, Iger is a very successful CEO. Disney under him has made these sort of risky decisions to buy big properties like Marvel and Star Wars, and it's paid off very, you know, massively for them. And his salary reflects it, but Abigail Disney's larger point essentially seemed to revolve around the fact that Disney's a huge company. It has a lot of people, obviously people who work at the parks, people who work all over the company who only make $15 an hour, maybe even less. And she seemed to just sort of object to Iger's $65 million paycheck. You know, it was a moral objection that she was making.
So I guess the question here, if there's one company that's controlling so much of what we consume, what does that mean for us culturally, if anything?
Well, there's this sort of widening gap between small movies, independent movies, and the kind of big budget franchise stuff that Disney and other studios like Warner Brothers and Universal have been favoring of late. And I mean, the reason for that is this sort of gargantuan size that we're talking about. You know, the only way to make an impression on your stockholders or on, you know, sort of worldwide grosses is to make these very large scale projects. And that means that that kind of middle ground, that kind of mid-budget movie, which was always sort of the backbone of Hollywood, things like romantic comedies, Oscar-winning drama-type movies, those are less and less interesting to a studio like Disney, which is trying to sort of make a big impression with every release.
At the end of the day, Disney is creating content for consumers. Is having access to so much content from one place a good thing for consumers or not?
I mean, again, it comes also down to the Netflix question, which is these new bundled sort of services like Disney Plus, which is their streaming service that they're getting ready to launch, and other studios like Warner Brothers and Universal are gearing up their own versions of that kind of a service. A big streaming service is going to bundle together anything that they own so that, you know, for a monthly fee, you get to watch whatever you want. That seems to be the consumer preference for how to consume media now. The Netflix model, sort of a big streaming database that you can access on your phone or on your television or whatever for a monthly fee, that's what all of these older movie studios have realized they're going to have to compete with. And so Disney's move in acquiring Fox, which obviously Disney has the largesse to do it, but it's a $71 billion acquisition. It's an incredibly huge acquisition for any company to make. Disney is really just sort of trying to get ahead of what it sees as this streaming threat, and, you know, on the horizon in Netflix, and offer a similar kind of comprehensive choice. And it seems like that's what the future of media is for American consumers, probably for worldwide consumers.
David Sims is a culture writer for The Atlantic. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.